Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to witness history in the making. From the dawn of history, a better way of life has been man's dream. Make friends, grow bigger crops, get real smoking satisfaction, strengthen our national defense.
And it's all because of
LiveInTheStudio.tv.
Good evening and welcome to Las Vegas and the Mob. Denny Griffin here, and for the next hour I'll be your host. And tonight we're going to be talking entertainment and a little bit about the mob. I don't want to confuse anybody thinking I have mobsters with me tonight. My guests are not mobsters as far as I know.
How you doing?
Here with me in the studio is Nikki Artelli. Nikki, in fact, was here a couple of weeks ago with Tempest Storm. And she is a columnist and does celebrity interviews. Nikki, welcome back to Las Vegas and the Mob.
Thank you for having me here.
And also joining us is Johnny Seaton.
How you doing?
Hi, Johnny.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being in here.
Yeah.
And Johnny is a singer and songwriter. He's done a lot of work, Elvis-related work, and you probably can tell if you're watching it live at thestudio.tv that he bears some resemblance to Mr. Presley. And he also has his own band, and, I'm going to let Johnny tell you more about himself, but thanks both of you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, our pleasure, actually.
And would you care to start and give us a little of your history and your background?
Well. Anyway, yeah, the first time my experience here in Las Vegas was back in 1988 in a show called Elvis and American Musical, which was out of New York City. I was I'm originally from Maryland, right outside of D.C., and I was working with my band out there and doing all kinds of rock and roll and rockabilly music. I'm a songwriter, as you mentioned, and working with a guy named Danny Gatton, and we go into New York City, and I went to New York City and did a show called Elvis Mania, which was right in the middle of Times Square, and I worked for some gentlemen that were related to the mob, but I can't mention any names. And that was very funny. I was walking down the street and on Broadway and in Times Square where there was XXX. Now, we're talking about 1984. And I was a young man, and I was actually in New York walking around with my first album and going to record labels trying to get a deal. I'm walking down in Times Square after everybody had thrown my record in the trash. That's what they said. The guy said, "Hey, what do you think? You know, you think you're going to go into these record companies? They're going to take your record and you're going to get a record deal? They're already put it in the trash." And I went, "Well, that's not good." So we went down to Times Square to have some fun. Walking down Times Square, and here I see this little A-frame that they put the chalk on the chalkboard. It's usually for a restaurant or what have you. The Kit Kat Club is over here. XXS movies are over here. And then there's this little place that's got a chalkboard that says, "Auditioning for Elvis Presley." I said, "That sounds like a fun thing to do. I'm going to go in here and see what I can do." And I walked in, and there was hammers and nails, and it was some kind of strip joint at the time.
And at that point, were you doing Elvis?
I had did. Elvis has been very, very good to me. I started when I was a very young man. Oh. On that end, my mom was a great singer. My family's very musical, and I was the coffee table guy. I got up on the coffee table and entertained my family's friends for dinner parties and so on. And then I just caught the fever when I got into high school and did talent shows at that time, I think the Gong Show was big on TV. Mm-hmm. And then at College Park and at the Maryland University, they had a thing called the Bong Show, which was, related to the bong, meaning marijuana, I assume. And I actually, that was one of the things I got started on. I auditioned for that, got in the contest, and won the contest. And then in high school, while I was still in high school, and when I had a band, and we did Blue and Gold, which was the talent show for the high school every year. And I was a football player as well, and I wanted to get on stage. And I told the football guys, "Hey man, let's get on stage. Let's go audition for," because usually all the thespians did that show for the represented the talent of the school, but never the football players. So we got in, and I did my Elvis Presley thing, "All Shook Up," "Don't Be Cruel," what have you, and we got in, and it went over so well that my principal started booking me in other high schools to raise money from Vince Lombardi Cancer Society to cystic fibrosis and multiple sclerosis, and the cameras came. You know, it was like the news would show up and the newspapers would show up, and they'd say, "Local kid raises money for good cause, Elvis Presley," you know, and they put me on the front cover combing my hair. And, you know, we started going through cheap versions of jumpsuits and costuming. And it was just a lot of fun. And really, in my senior year, I did the talent show again, and this time with the full-blown band and the whole nine yards. And the Department of Defense tour people came down from Washington, D.C., which I live right next door to. A friend of mine has family that worked at the Forestell building in D.C., which is the same where the Department of Defense was at, that he did the USO tours. And I did the show, and after I finished the show, two gentlemen, Colonel Frank, I think was his name, and Lieutenant, I'm not sure the last name because it goes back so far, but I remember Colonel Frank, and he came back and said, "We've already talked to your principal, and we want to see you on Thursday in our office at 10 a.m. You can have school off." And I said, "What for? Am I in trouble?" and we went down there, and they pulled a map down, and basically of the world, and said, and mainly Europe, and said, "Where would you like to go?" And I said, "What do you mean, where would I like to go? We're going to put you on tour." So two weeks after I graduated from high school, Dennis, I was. Like, I'd never been really out of Maryland except to go to Pennsylvania once and Florida one other time with my family. And then I was then on a 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, I was on a USO tour for 11 weeks, traveling all over the Mediterranean. We started the Azores, which is a Portuguese island, and then went to Germany. And from Germany, we went to, Sicily and Italy and Spain and up the coast. So
you were about 18, 19?
I was 19 years old, yeah.
And never really been away alone anyway.
Never been away. I was with a bunch of college musicians that they all graduated from Maryland University and Catholic University, which are the local colleges from where I grew up. Great bunch of guys. Had a great band. We had to hire two girls to come along with us. One ended up being my sister-in-law. And we had a ball, and it was what an experience for
a
young
guy. You good? They took good care of you.
I'm sorry.
The USO people took good care of you. They
treated
very
good care of us. It was hurry up and wait, you know, just like the military is.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I would come in and they'd say, "Oh, you're Johnny Seaton, right?" No, Johnny Seaton. And then the next player, "You're Johnny Wheaton, right?" No, Johnny Seaton. Didn't matter. I was on tour. And we had a ball. I mean, we were playing in aircraft carriers and battleships. We played in the middle of a dead volcano right outside of Naples, Italy. And I had the privilege of playing on the same concert with Harry Chapin, who's a great singer and songwriter. And that was phenomenal. Quite an experience. And when I got back from that tour, I got people were coming up to me and wanting to represent me. And, when I never had management before or anything like that, and the Capitol Center out of Washington, D.C., the Capitol Center is no longer there, but Abe Poland, who is the owner of several of the sports team and real estate all over Washington, Virginia area and many other states in the union, they wanted to take me on as in, with management, and I worked with him for a couple different years and auditioned for movie. Elvis Presley, like I said, has been very good to me.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's been really strange at times as well, because at that time, it was probably 1978, 79, and to the early 80s, just after Elvis died. I mean, Elvis died in 1977, so here I am. I'm doing this Elvis thing. It's getting publicity all over the Eastern Seaboard, at least, and sometimes national, depending. I auditioned for a movie called The King of Rock and Roll. Got touted as the guy who was going to play the part. The movie never happened.
Oh, no.
Just, you know, one of those things, you know, things are not supposed to, they're going to happen or not. And so, again, now back up to where I was. Now I'm developing my own music. I'm like, enough of this Elvis stuff. I really just want to do my own music. I want to have my own career outside of the impersonation. Started writing music. Entered a contest in Washington, D.C. called the Battle of the Bands, which was a big hoopla thing in 1982. And I won the whole thing. It was a $10,000 cash prize and what have you. And got my airplay with my record on a local records radio station, DC 101. 84, now I'm trying to tout my music again in New York, walking down the street, A-frame, front of a strip club in New York City Broadway. And I walk in and I say, I'd like to audition for your show here. I really wasn't interested. Just thought this was going to be fun. This would be a fun thing to do. And it was dusty and dirty and dark and smelly. And this guy comes up and goes, well, what are you going to do? Did you bring an accompanist with you? And I go, no, I didn't. I said, I'll sing a cappella. Is that okay? And he goes, well, okay, that's unusual, but that's okay. You can do that. I'm tired. I've seen 400 Elvises today. Get it. You're the last one. Get up there.
Well, now's
so,
a good time to sing
Acapulco. Right, well, I get up there, and
I start singing,
oh, well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love. Oh, you know, so they're like, hey, do another one, you know. Like, don't be cruel. And all the songs you ever want to hear by Elvis, but for $9.95, it's good. So I'm thinking, Heartbreak Hotel, Suspicious Minds. I'm there now for almost 45 minutes to an hour, standing there just singing a cappella. He goes, hey, you play guitar? And I go, I play very badly, but I play a little. Just like Elvis.
He didn't play good?
Not really. And, but he did play that. He played better than me. And anyway, he goes, well, I got a guitar show. He owned both sides of Times Square, all the buildings. He was trying to clean up the block. Well, basically, he goes, I want to buy a guitar for you. I got a guitar shop across the music store. I would like to buy you a guitar. I said, I don't want you to buy me a guitar. I don't want to be obligated to this. So I said, let's go rent a guitar. So we went and rent a guitar, and I pounded on it. And went, well, since my baby left me, singing stuff like that. What I could play at the time, I played a little better now than I did then. But then they brought another guitar. I'm now there for just ages. We're there for an hour and a half, 2 hours into an audition. The guy keeps asking me to sing more and more and more.
So you're going to buy me lunch after this?
No, this is what he does. He goes, look, obviously we like you. And I go, thank you. He goes, I want to negotiate a deal with you. I want to go to the office across the street. Will you do that? I said, no, you know what? This has been a lot of fun. Thanks a lot. I'm not really interested. He goes, no. I want you to do this for me. I want you to come over. We'll talk. So I go over there. Walking into this grandiose office, a beautiful office, and here he is with his director and the set designer and so on. It's a very small place, a little shotgun of a place that we're playing, and I'm going, why are you doing this? Why are you putting an Elvis Presley show in the middle of Times Square when you got XXX everywhere, you know, porno stuff everywhere? And he's, He goes, well, I've made a deal with the city that if I clean up the block, then I can sell it. And my wife likes Elvis Presley. And so I'm doing this for her and so I can sell this real estate. So I, true story. And I go, well, so I'm thinking, you know, I'm green. I'm like 19, 20 years old, 21 tops. And I go, I try to outprice, you know, just price it into nowhere's man's bill, you know, and he's, and I go, well, I want this much for me, and I need to bring my own band in. And I got to bring my own sound and lighting equipment. I have to be involved in the writing of the show and the structure of it and the costuming of it. And he goes, yeah, okay, done. Oh, we need housing. Okay, done. So he gives us like an entire build, a whole floor of entire building that's vacant. Me and the band. So I'm living in Times Square on the third floor of this building.
In the X-rated section.
In the X-rated section of town. That was a ball, I'm telling you. And the funniest part is, Nikki, is that that it was Deadsville down there, except for people who wanted to go see porn and see XXX and strippers and so on.
And what was the name of your show?
It was, well, they renamed the theater to the Off on Broadway Theater, because it was considered an off-Broadway show, but we were on Broadway. And the show was called Elvis Mania, and so we were taking on the Beatlemania craze that was at the time, so we said, well, Beatles can do it, Elvis can do it. So we went Elvis Mania, and here I am with 15-foot-high poster of my ugly butt on Broadway with XXX over here, girls, it just took off. I mean, he really did a grand job of advertisement, and then here we are, you know, weeks in after it got great reviews, and here's now for the first time in the history of the Times Square, and at that time I should say, because Broadway was always Broadway,
right.
But Times Square kind of went into that shape
that
where it went.
One little section there,
right? And then there was limousines and very lot of wealthy people coming to see this show, and it was probably maybe a 250 capacity little place, and we had it packed every night for about 3.5 months, and then I can say, knock on wood, and I wasn't the only reason why, but I had something to do with why Times Square was cleaned up. And the Novotel came in, Disney came in, all these huge, beautiful hotels in the middle of Times Square are now there where I used to play in that section.
So that was the same
thing.
Right in that spot, huh? Right
same
in that
spot, yeah.
Wow.
Guy made a lot of money.
You were part of history.
Well, I can only hope so. I can only hope so. You said that said at the beginning of the show, right?
Yeah.
We're gonna make history.
That's right.
I can tell you that was a lot of that was a ball. It, you know, he went to some of the street people. That was so cool. It was really funny. And he go, when we first started, he walked up to them and he knew them by name.
Yeah.
They knew him because I guess he would give them
money.
And he say, you see this guy? You see these guys right here talking to the band? Anybody messes with them, you mess with the people that are messing with them, and then you come to me. All right. You gotta love this. So it was a fantastic time in my life. Elvis Mania turned into me recording another album, touring that with Danny Gatton, who was a great guitar player. He's passed on now, but he was one of the best in the world. I had the privilege of working with him on two of the albums that I did, and then New York called again with Elvis and American Musical. And Elvis and American Musical was written by Robert Benowitz, who did Beatlemania. He happened to be at the show Elvis Mania, as a matter of fact, when I did that. 2 years later, he gets like $5 million budget, does a fantastic show. Elvis Presley Estate was involved in it as well. We had a great director and choreographer. We have Pat Birch, who did Grease on Broadway as well as the films, discovered the likes of John Travolta and Michelle Pfeiffer and so on. Was very instrumental in the lift of their career. And here I'm working with him. Phil Ramone, who was one of the musical directors of the show. Just a list of New York and L.A. great people.
You mentioned that the Presley Estate approved you. You were the only one. Right.
They auditioned like 2,000 people, from what I gathered, worldwide with that show. And I got the lead in it. There was two other gentlemen that were in the show, too. Terry, Mike Jeffrey, and, goodness, I don't recollect the other guy's name, and he's going to kill me for this. Anyway, they did basically Elvis Presley in his youth. That was Terry, Mike Jeffrey. Then Elvis Presley from stardom of like Heartbreak Hotel, the first national hit, to Las Vegas at the Hilton. I did all that part, which is like 33 songs and 29 costume changes. There was 29 songs and 33 costume changes. Outrageous. And then the gentleman at the end came and did Elvis at death. Out of the two-hour program, I probably did about an hour and a half of that show. And it was all cast in New York, and then we went on the road to develop it and get it tweaked, like in Connecticut, and then we went to Houston, Cleveland, Houston, and then we actually did the Hilton, the Las Vegas Hilton, where Elvis Presley played in the same showroom, and it was sold out. Unbelievably sold out in 1988. Fantastic time. I mean, playing the stage where Elvis Presley himself played, same stage, same setup. But we were talking about that before we got on camera. You know, the old days of the showroom. Now they got the general seating and the theater type seating, which is fine to see a show. But remember, the old days when you'd come in and sit in the booth.
In the booth and have dinner.
And have the cocktail waitress come over and have the dinner, the dinners, and have the maitre d' at the door that would, you know, go, you slip them $50 and they bring you down to the front row or what have you, depending on the show. That was a lot of fun. And I was right on, the end of that era when in 88, 89. We repeated twice here as we traveled between. We were here in the summer of 88 and the summer of 89, and in between we traveled all over the United States and Canada with that show. It's a great success. It was a great success in this town. Very proud to be a part of it. And the city has changed so much since then, man. Wow. Unbelievable.
Now, you were at the tail end of the mob. We were talking about that earlier. The mob there was some mobdom left.
Nobody ever really mentioned it, right? But you could always tell because these guys with the slick back hair and the tuxedos with walking around, and you know, they were very protective of the entertainers,
right?
Which was awesome, and very friendly. Just like as the gentleman that I a whole bunch of guys, they're very gentlemen, actually, really nice guys. If they like you, you're part of their club, you know, even if you're not part of the club. They're very, very sweet, nice, protective, wonderful people to hang around with.
I've always heard that they knew how to take care of the customers and the entertainers, the employees.
Absolutely.
They knew how to deal with people.
No doubt about it. It was a thrill to watch. Yeah. It was like magic to watch. Yeah. You know, it was like, what a profession, and how they did it.
I got to ask you a question. Just came to me, and you were mentioning a few minutes ago that Elvis passed away in 77. Now, you never met him in person, I think.
No, I never did. I never had the privilege. I did see him once in concert in 74, in 1974. I know the funny story about that. My hair was down to here, parted in the middle. My brother, Al, he looked more like Elvis than I do. And he was 3 years older than I, but we walked in here. I was a little teenager, and he was a little older, about 18 or 19 for him. And we were walking in the Cole Fieldhouse in Maryland University to go see Elvis Presley, and everybody's stopping my brother for an autograph.
Aw, no kidding.
It's got to be him. He looked like Elvis from the movies, right? And we went to see Elvis, and we were up in the nosebleed seats. And it was a big echo chamber at the Cole Fieldhouse. But he came out and he was, you know, he wasn't quite all there, if you know what I mean. And
mm-hmm.
he, you know, was let that part of his life was starting to destroy. He was starting to destroy himself. And he came out and he did about 20 minutes really fast music. You know, it was like, oh, sweet, sweet, sweet rider, oh, sweet, don't be cruel, baby, let me be, you know.
Yeah.
And he got, you know, he went through 20 minutes and he looked, he was standing on stage like this. And he went, ladies and gentlemen, and he looked at his belt buckle and he says, I got to go. And he goes down to his crush and went, I really got to go.
And he did?
Yes. And he left. Oh. He left. The band's there, still there, the whole orchestra and everything. Everybody's laughing, going, hey, Elvis has got to take a pee. This is great. You know, he's human just like the rest of us. And, you know, the light bulbs, the flashing of the bulbs and everything, it was just magnificent. But he was only really on stage for like 20 minutes. Magnificent thing to see, though, with all these bulbs going, just lighting up the
wow.
room. And then he says, I got to go. Well, as the audience is sitting there giggling and laughing, the lights come up, and everybody's going, what's going on? too.
And you know what would be good, too, to include a drink with your ticket?
Absolutely.
You know
what? That's a good idea.
Yes.
We'll have to incorporate that.
Really? Because they come in and then they already pay for the ticket, then they have to buy a drink. Include it. Even if you add another dollar on their ticket, give them a free drink.
When I did the Hilton, I think the top ticket was $27, $29.
Uh-huh.
You got dinner with that.
Yeah.
And I think you got two drinks with that as well. Dinner or two drinks. I'm not sure how it worked. I think it was dinner and two drinks. And that was back, and that was 88, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Gag never wasn't that long ago. But it feels like it.
Johnny, let me ask you a question. And maybe you don't know the answer to this, but I was just, what's your feeling that from a career standpoint, strictly, not personal, but just from a career perspective, when Elvis passed in 77, did that have any effect on your career? Did it make Elvis performers more in demand, less in demand, or neutral? Do you think there was any effect
at all?
I think
there was a lot more in demand, absolutely. I mean, I didn't get into that career move. I got in that career move by mistake, by accident. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was doing top 40 music with my band in high school, and then we did because I could do an imitation of Elvis Presley, or I say emulation, we did a 20-minute end of the night thing for the fun of it.
It was brilliant, though, that you did that.
Well, the funniest thing is we did it for college rock clubs, and everybody would just stop and stare. And that was, say, 78, 79, and they would just college students would go, "What's that?" You know, so it really kind of, I think, you know, everybody was shocked that Elvis Presley died at 42 years old.
I know.
You know, I mean, good Lord, he was way too young, for God's sake.
He was.
And it was just, it's a tragedy that the world lost such an incredible performer, even though he was on his downswing for a few years prior to 77. You would think that some of his Memphis Mafia or somebody that was involved in his personal life at home and his private life would go, you know, let's tie the guy up and throw him in a closet and get him away from what he's doing,
know.
You know? And maybe he would have survived. I don't know. But, of course, I mean, it affected the industry in general. You lost the king of rock and roll, you know, and then everybody wanted to see what the king of rock and roll was like if they never saw him.
Sure.
So performers like myself, you know, you get hired to do, you know, these hour-long or hour-and-a-half, 2-hour, 3-hour gigs to sing the music of Elvis Presley. Las Vegas has been inundated, not as much anymore as it used to be, but inundated with Elvis Presley impersonators. They're even building it, from what I gather, I just read it with Loretta on the computer the other day, they're building an Elvis Presley themed hotel right off the strip, where the Harley Davidson store is.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be done in 2012. I don't think they broke ground yet, but the Presley estate is involved. There's all kinds of different investment people, major league investment people. Elvis Presley, you know, I don't think he'll ever die. Because he's so Americana, he's an American icon, and you know, from the television days in the 1950s when he started with doing my education, and as an actor, I had to do that. You know, I mean, I really had to go back into the history of Elvis Presley to learn how to do Elvis Presley. I always sang, but to really emulate him as an actor, I mean, you have to do your education.
Yeah.
The education comes from looking at all this old footage, reading.
Right.
Reading books, reading, you know, all kinds of articles that were written about him from and interviewing people. I had the privilege of meeting so many great people that worked with Elvis. The Carl Perkins I worked with, what a great gentleman he was. Guy wrote Blue Suede Shoes, if the public doesn't know. That's just one of the songs that he wrote. The Beatles covered a bunch of his songs, like Honey Don't, as an example, True Love, so on. But Blue Suede Shoes was Carl's big hit. He worked with Elvis, knew Elvis.
Yeah.
That's a funny story about Carl. When I was, I'll be 19, I went to see Carl in College Park, Maryland. And I walked in and sat down at the table. Carl was up there singing and doing his thing. He's a great, cool cat, rockabilly dude. And he kept looking over at my table. He's looking at me. I'm getting, he can't, maybe, and I'm looking around going, nah, it's just me. I'm not, he's not. Finally, his manager came over and said, you know, Carl would like to meet you in his, at his bus in the back. I said, why? Because he thinks you look like somebody he knows. I walked back there, and I had just finished recording, so I was about 20, recording some music with the Jardineers, who were Presley's backup singers in Nashville. Mm-hmm. I think I did four songs with them singing backup. I had that tape with me.
Oh.
And and I walked into Carl's bus, and he came out and said, man, it's like seeing a ghost. It's like seeing a ghost, man. And I said, I was with him, at Louisiana Hayride, and we were on the road together. I knew him from Sun Records. He looked just like him when you were, and I was, at that time, I was 20 years old. He looked just like him at that age. And I ended up working with Carl at the Pontiac Silverdome with his band, which is made up of his kids. Well, a couple of his kids, anyway. And got to meet Jerry Lee Lewis, the killer. And they would tell me all these great stories. I've met Priscilla Presley, who gave me insight on the man and what he was like off stage. Colonel Tom Parker was a big fan of mine, and he was a good friend, as a matter of fact. I did the Today Show.
No, you did.
To promote Elvis and American Musical. And after I finished that, I think I sang a medley of songs with the band that was playing with the show. And here we are on the Today Show with Brian Gumbel and so on, Jane Curtin. There's a phone call for you in the green room. And I go to the phone, and it's Colonel Tom Parker.
Oh.
And he goes, I just bought an ad and TV guide for you. We're getting prepared for you to be here at the Las Vegas Hilton. I really like your act, and I can't wait to meet you. We became great friends for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Just from that show. And I got a lot of insight about Elvis Presley by meeting those people. Elvis has been very connected to me for some odd reason since I was a kid. To answer your question, I'm so long-winded. That, yes, of course it affected so many people, it affected my career.
Yeah.
It affected my career because I would have never been able to meet any of these people. I would have never been able to get on the road and do USO tours for the military and travel from New York to Las Vegas. I would have never been able to do those things. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with my own music.
But you have the talent. I mean,
I would have still been singing in some facet. But Presley really catapulted my career up to a point where people were noticing very quickly. So, man, God bless Elvis Presley. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I said that about Tony Spilotro.
You did? Right.
Kidding. No, I'm kidding. I've never been in the entertainment business, so this might be a foolish question, but when you're in a position looking for a room here, a show, when you make your contacts with various people, how does it work, like, for your band? Do you have to bring a band with you? Do they provide? How does this come down to set the whole thing up?
The last time I was here, I just got musicians from the town.
Mm-hmm.
I moved here after being on the road with Joseph for 7 years. I had a new family with two young children, and I said, well, we're moving to Vegas, and I'm going to find a room, and I know I can work there. Well, the face of Vegas had changed again, one more time again.
Yeah,
it changed hands one more time again. Although I knew a few people, I didn't know everybody. And I ended up, when I first got back here, working in Branson, Missouri. You know, I'm like, why am I going to live in Vegas when I'm working in Branson? And then I Donny Osmond, here we go. He's doing his show at the MGM Grand in the back area where the theme park used to be. It was a little theater back there. And that's where they had set up the filming of Donnie Marie's TV show. So I said, well, let's go over and see Donnie. And I got, you know, that passes to go. My two little ones, they were infants, couldn't go into the studio or into the theater to see the studio shooting or the shooting of the Donnie Marie's show. So my ex-wife She was my wife at the time. Now she's my ex-wife. Okay, let's see. The mother of my children. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Went in with another friend of mine, Barbara Glidewell, who's a very dear friend of mine. He was actually great friends with Elvis Presley. She became a great friend and a dear friend of mine. They went in to see the filming of, and I'm sitting in the green room with my two little ones. Here, have a cookie. As we were, when the filming was over and we were walking out of the park, this is how I got the MGM Grand, when I played the MGM Grand in 99. We were walking out of the park, and the mother of my children said, the gentleman is standing in front of you, walking in front of us out of the park, is the head of operations for MGM Grand Properties. I said, are you sure of that? Yes, he was just on stage with Donnie and Marie, and he was introduced that way. So I went, and I tapped him on his shoulder, and he turned around like, well, what do you want? And I said, I understand that you're the head of operations for MGM Grand. He said, yes. I said, well, I'm a friend of Donnie Osmond's. I worked with him and Joseph for 6.5 years, and I got a show for you guys. And I've been trying to place it in this town since I got here, and I can't catch a cold. and he goes, well, any friend of Donnie Osmond's is a friend of the MGM's. He goes, I'll set up an appointment for you. I said, wait a minute, before you go, you got to promise me you're not lying to me, because I've been told that people are going to see me over and over again, but nobody will see me. He goes, no, I'll make sure of it. So 2 days later, he called me.
He did.
And he called me up, and he said, I got an appointment with you at the MGM with the Vice President of Entertainment. And I said, thank you very much, sir. And I went over there, and I made my presentation. And the funniest thing is they said, the guy, Todd Dougal, he said, Johnny, your presentation is great. I see that you're a real professional act, and I just have to tell you, we don't have a room to put you in at this time. I said, you have got to be kidding me. You guys own, like, at that time, it was before they bought all the property.
Yeah.
And that they bought from Wynn Properties and so on. And I said, you know, come on, there's got to be somewhere you can put me. I'll just put me somewhere so I can show you what I do. And he said, you know what, I like your tenacity. And he walked out of the room for a minute. He came back. He goes, come with me. And we walked down to the big dome. At the the front door of the MGM, and there's a big stage that was set up about 9 feet in the air, and there was three huge big screens behind it, and there was a lounge. He said, "What do you think about that?" I said, "I'll take it." So they gave me a 2-week contract with a 2-week option, their option, and I turned it into 3 years.
3 years.
3 years there. And,
from 2 weeks.
We were
from
doing,
not having a room.
That shows how talented you were.
Well, I thank God for that. I really know that even at my dadgone old age now, I've been in the business for... I still absolutely enjoyed seeing the audience smile, and
yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Thrill, no.
Right? That's the thrill.
I hate to say this, but our hour is up. We didn't get a song. Maybe we can have you back some other time, and we can hear you sing something.
Yeah, I'll bring the guitar the next time, or maybe we'll just bring the band in here. Can we set up for that?
We'll ask Artie.
Hey, Artie.
Yeah.
Can we set up for a band next time?
It is a recording studio.
Okay, there you go. There's the answer.
Okay.
Well, we'll make sure. Dennis, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Nikki, thank you. And thanks for introducing me to Johnny.
With me.
Yes.
And I look forward to next time and hearing you sing.
All right, my brother.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you next week. Good night.
Are you going to be able to get his song in part of this thing now?
Yeah, well, he's got it.
By and by. You've got to see before you buy. SpyandBuy.com. The world's first free video classifieds.
type of cigar?
SpyandBuy.com. You've got to see before you buy.
It's a dream.
SpyandBuy.com.
The lights are going dim. The sound of your breathing has made the mood I'm in. All of my resistance is lying on the floor, taking me to places I've never been before. Ooh, and I can feel it, feel it, feel it. Way down like a tidal wave. Way down where the fire plays. Way down, down. Ooh, my head is spinning. You got me in a spell. 100 magic fans, a whirling carousel. The medicine within me, the doctor could prescribe. Your love is doing something that I just can't describe. Ooh, and I can feel it, feel it, feel it, feel it, feel it. Way down where the music plays, way down like a tidal wave. Way down where the fire plays, way down, down, you'll be on down, be on down. Hold me again as tight as you can. I need you so, so baby, let's go. Way down where it feels so good. Way down where I hope you would. Way down where I never could. Way down, down.
I think you might recognize this one. Yeah, you can do that. Put your hands together. No, man.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I love. Baby, why can't you see? Oh, what you're doing to me? Oh, we don't believe what I'm saying. We can go on together with sufficient minds.
With suspicious minds.
never lie to you.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo!
Man, it's hot up here, I have to tell you. But I don't mind, it's fun. And what a fantastic audience you guys are. Thank you so much. God bless you. Well, let's do another one, man.
You are about to witness history in the making. From the dawn of history, a better way of life has been man's dream. Make friends. Grow bigger crops. Get real smoking satisfaction. Strengthen our national defense.
And it's all because of...
Live at the studio.tv.
The inspector might at least have waited until morning. I mean, a job like this in the middle of the night? It's not to my liking.
Come now, Miller. Stop complaining. The inspector needs a post-mortem right away.
Doctor, I saw all the victims. What a horrible sight. I'm used to seeing death. But I assure you, I got sick.
And they think a werewolf did the killing. According to the people around here, it was the man whose body is waiting for the post-mortem. Ignorance and superstition won't disappear easily from this part of the world. Too bad.
Daninsky. Right after he came to Alzadis, reign of terror commenced.
Werewolves. Silver bullets and all that nonsense. Men are shot up to the moon today, and people still believe those stupid old tales.
There are mysterious forces on this earth. Things that science hasn't explained as yet. Yes, sir, things that lead people to a fate worse than death. And there is very little that science can do.
I don't believe in superstition.
Dr. Hartwig, look at the scar. It's pentagonal. It's the mark of the werewolf.
I'm going to make an incision in his chest.
Dr. Hartwig, don't you want to start on the stomach?
He's supposed to be a werewolf, right? According to the old legend, if the bullet that killed him is extracted from his chest, he should come back to life. Let's see. Please, will you get me the other bistri? I'm going to take out those two silver bullets, and I can assure you our Mr. Daninsky will be as dead as ever.
Wow. should be finished by now.
I'm still working on it. Not easy. I have so much to write.
See whether I remember. It's something about black magic. Which... professed worship of Satan. And the Inquisition in France. Am I right?
Fairly close. Lately we've come across a really most fascinating character. Juandesa Darvola Dinadasi. Hungarian countess who lived in the 11th century. There's quite a legend about her. A rather horrible one. Procedures of black magic. She took part in the Sabbath and worshipped Satan. The Inquisition tried to condemn her, but strangely enough, all who came in contact with her were eventually murdered. To preserve her beauty, she practiced an ancient ritual. It was handed down through all the mistresses of black magic. She drank the blood of young virgins. Their young bodies of all their blood, she disposed of her victims in a unique way. Legend has it that she was a vampire, and that her lover, discovering the truth, killed her the only way possible. He stabbed her with the silver cross of the Mayenza chalice.
Country.
We should have already reached the village, don't you agree?
Yeah.
Soon it will be dark, and we should try to find some direction.
We should try and find some gas.
What a place. It makes me so creepy.
Perhaps Count Dracula will appear. I'm sure that he would invite us to spend the night at his castle.
Oh, you. That's not funny. Help us.
Mm-hmm.
I feel better. Hello? Hello? Is anybody here? Hello? Thank you.
found me. I'm the only one who lives around here. I just happen to be in this area exploring these ruins. My house is over there, a couple kilometers away.
And what about the village of Les Chats? Is it far from here?
The village is rather far. Quite far, in fact. Accept my hospitality for a few days. Pierre, my handyman, he has a small car and can take you to the village. There you can get some gasoline and be on your way.
Have you got a telephone?
Sorry, no telephone. No electricity. You might think it's a bit primitive living in this area, but I find the conditions ideally suitable for my work. I'm a writer. I've been living here for 6 months. By now, I'm a bit thirsty for some intelligent conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Dolinsky.
I'm writing a book about the history of Gothic churches and monuments here in the north of France. I found many buildings, practically unknown.
Will you have your book published in France?
I don't think so. It's for the University of Cologne.
Oh, as we told you, Elvira and I are going to graduate soon. We're here to work on our final thesis. Perhaps you could help us, since you know the area around here so well.
I'll be glad to help you in any possible way. What is it you're looking for?
We're looking for the tomb of a famous witch, a countess, expert in black magic, who could turn into a vampire. The tomb should be near here. Her name was Juandesa Dávila de Nadasi. Switches. It's possible. The insulation hasn't been connected yet. Another thing. Do you notice how upset he became tonight when I mentioned Juandesa? Almost fainted. Oh, come now. Go to bed and stop making up wild stories. I don't think the man is that strange. I'm convinced that he is a kind person who is trying to help her. He said he was thirsty for company. Be nice. Suck your blood. Don't be afraid. This isn't Dracula's house. Take a couple of sleeping pills. No, just take one. They're rather strong. They'll do you good. You'll sleep easily. And Genevieve, you took them, didn't you? Sure, I always do. Please let me sleep. I'm tired.